Mary, I know most of you. This weekend, we celebrated our diocesan synod, a fancy ecclesiastical word for convention, a gathering. I was asked to preach, and Mike was a little complaining about having to get a sermon ready. You know, while the weekend was very, very full, started Thursday for the clergy. And so Allie had this great idea. Why don't you just get Mary to give the same sermon? And she thought it was a great idea. And then Jana and David were there, and they cheered Mike and I guess me on. So then Allie isn't here.
No, she's here.
Oh, she is. Okay, I didn't see her. I kept looking. I'm thinking, that isn't fair. She puts me up to it. Although she has heard it, so we would have forgiven her either way. Anyway, so let's dive in. And it was a sermon written because we ordained 5 deacons, and it was pretty cool. And deacon, as you know, means servant. So some of them are going to stay deacons the rest of their lives. Some of them are deacons on the way to being a priest, because all priests are supposed to remember to be servants. Don't you think that in our culture, the word servant is a dirty word? I mean, really. It's certainly not something you aspire to. You know, ask kids. Haven't you done this? I'm old enough. I've done it with a lot of kids. What do you want to be when you grow up? No one ever says a servant. I mean, my brother wanted to be a garbage man. You know, I think because, you know, those cool trucks, and he thought the idea of riding on the outside of the cool truck, I think that's the reason. He's an investment banker. Not that they aren't servants. Anyway, but for those of us who follow Jesus, servant should never be a dirty word. Actually, it should be something we aspire to. Really? That's what we're called to. Being a servant is something that was transformed. The concept of being a servant was transformed by Jesus. In his stories, the stories he told, like the one Mike read for us this morning, his words and his actions. Over and over, he challenged his disciples, his apprentices, to think differently about their leadership. And over, they didn't. So we ordain deacons, but actually, we're all called to be servants, all of us who follow Jesus. And we're not just called to be servants, but we're called to actually model servanthood for others, and to draw them in to sort of a fellowship of servanthood, stooping down, seeing and meeting needs, cleaning up messes of all sorts, laundry, dishes, runny noses, and other duties as assigned by God or someone else. I mean, I think this is true for Christians in the workplace too. It isn't just for, you know, church people or clergy. We were called to serve and to gather others to serve with us. So the gospel that Mike just read is a favorite of mine. Well, I know you hear me say that every time I preach, but anyway, it is. It's a story Jesus told about bondservants, not the same word we get deacon from, which is just servant, but bondservants are the lowest of the low on the servant hierarchy. And it's a visual nugget. You know, it's just 5 verses, but it packs a wallop. So I want to unpack it for us this morning. First, notice the action. You probably missed it. It's 12:35 to 40. Luke 12:35 to 40, if you want to follow along. So he calls for 3 actions. Well, one of them isn't quite an action, but anyway. First one is stay dressed for action. Stay dressed for action. The second is keep your lamps burning. And the third is waiting for the master to come home from the wedding feast. So let's talk about each of them. First, stay dressed for action. Like, that's a nice translation for us because we get what that's supposed to mean. But it literally means gird your loins. So picture those Middle Eastern robes. Right? You've seen them on TV if you haven't seen them in person. Long flowing robes. It's kind of hard to work when you have long flowing robes. You know, sometimes you see clergy who have, you know, sanctuaries with stairs trip over them, right? Same thing. So gird your loins means you put on a belt, you know, a rope and then you pull up that robe on the belt so that your legs are free and able to do whatever task you're given. So Jesus is saying, be ready to work. You know, make sure you're dressed for action. You're not like sitting around in your regular long robes. Second, keep your lamps burning. Now remember, in Jesus' day, there was no electricity. And it's kind of hard to light a lamp if it's dark. Just saying. I mean, we don't have much experience with that. But you, not only that, but you have to find the light. You have to find the lamp. You have to find the light. And you have to light the lamp with the lighter that you found. Like, imagine doing that in pure darkness. So Jesus says, keep your lamps burning. You know, no matter how late it gets, keep your lamps burning so that you're not stumbling around in the dark when you're called upon to do something. So again, be ready to work. Same thing, be ready to work, not fumbling around. And then finally, waiting for their master to come home. Now, when you think of the word waiting, what do you think of? What?
Sitting around.
Being bored, you know, like being irritated when we're sitting at a red light, being irritated. Sorry to point a finger, not really, sorry, but anyway.
They don't go when it turns green.
Yeah. So that's what the word waiting in our language means, but the Greek word here means something different. It means, it really has a sense of eagerly expecting, right? You're on the, you know, tips of your toes. You're you know, like if you're a tennis player, pickleball player, you know, your knees are bouncy, right? You're not tired and bored prying your eyes open, even though it's getting later and later towards morning. You're eagerly anticipating your master's return. You can't wait. You can't wait. That might be a better way to say it. Eagerly anticipating your master's return. And what are these servants waiting for? For their master to come home. Did you hear from where? From the wedding feast. Right. You're good. Good. A+. So they want to be ready. So as soon as he knocks, boom, the door opens, right? And he can come in. And now picture the master, right? He's left the wedding feast. He left it. The feast is going on. You know, in the Middle East, weddings last a week or sometimes more, right? So he's leaving the feast in the middle of the feast. And he knocks quietly. Now, normally, in those days, in that place, you would call out if you were known. You'd call out so they'd know, okay, it's not a stranger. You only knock if you're a stranger. But for some reason, he knocks. Why do you think? Like, he doesn't want everyone to know he's left the party, right? Maybe he's the host and he snuck out, right? Or maybe he's the bridegroom at this wedding feast, or an honored guest. In any case, he sneaks out and knocks quietly, but the servants are listening, so they hear it. They can hear it. Just a little knock they can hear. It's probably an interior door. Those of you who've been to little villages in the Middle East have seen these houses that look kind of funny, right? They're just built on. When someone in the family gets married, they don't send them off to buy another house somewhere else. They just add on. And so some of them are added on and added on and added on, sometimes around a courtyard. So probably he's left the feast, the big banquet hall, and quiet tiptoed down and knocked on this interior door to his quarters. Can you picture his servants listening for that knock? Can you picture it? But then here's the shocking part. The attentive servants are blessed, we're told. When they open the door ready to serve him, he absolutely turns the table on him. Suddenly, he's dressed for a wedding. He's in his wedding finery. But what does he do? He goes and gets a rope, ties it around his beautiful clothes, maybe gold, you know, pulls up his robes and begins to serve them. We can't picture how shocking this would be. His Jesus listeners are going, what? This would never happen. All of it. None of this would ever happen. It's shocking that the master would serve. And they're reclining, you know, like this is a feast. They're not just, you know, grabbing something. They're reclining. He's really laying it all out for them. Now, also remember, it's gotten late, right? You heard that. It might even be early in the morning. And he's serving them food. Now, remember, no electricity? Cooking's over for the day. Fire's out. Ovens are off. No microwave dinner in the freezer. These watchful servants, though, are getting a fabulous meal. So where do you think that meal comes from? Where do you think? It comes from the wedding feast. Jesus brings the food for, I mean, not Jesus, but yes, Jesus. I mean, the master brings food from the feast, delicacies, and he serves them maybe the best meal they've ever had. Can you imagine this? If this is the result of waiting patiently, isn't it worth it? You're not, you know, you're not getting the hand-me-down food, right? You're getting the delicacies, the best. Can you imagine yourself in the servant's shoes? And here's the thing I've been thinking about. I mean, I've read this passage a bunch of times. I've preached it before, but like it hit me fresh this time. What if you were in their place? What we don't get a sense that these servants are newbies, right? They're not just, you know, they just weren't made servants yesterday. They've served him a while. They know what their master is like. If you've been serving a master like this, and his character is like this, doesn't that kind of change your experience of waiting? What do you think? Wouldn't you be excited, eager, curious, waiting for his return, not knowing what it'll bring this time, but you know it's going to be good? These servants are blessed, not just because they do the right things, not just because they're ready and waiting, but because how lucky are they? How lucky are they to have this one as their master? Now, shouldn't that be true of us? Shouldn't that be true of us who serve Jesus? We get to serve a master just like this, even if it doesn't always feel that way. Now, of course, this is a wonderful picture of servanthood, isn't it? Eagerly expecting the master to show up with treats. But Jesus didn't just talk about servant over and over, over and over to his disciples who are always edging one another up for who's the best, who's got the top place. I think Jesus must have rolled his eyes at them. But he didn't just talk about it, he lived it out. He acted it out over and over. But isn't the most vivid example on the night before he died? Like Jesus, John tells us, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he'd come from God and was going back to God, the night before he died, what did he do? Throw his weight around? Show off his glorious power? Do one more miraculous work? You guys know the story. No. No. He took a towel, put it on his belt, poured water into a basin, and washed each disciple's feet. Much to their shock and chagrin, this was a task that the lowest of the low servants do. And as Jesus is doing it, each of the disciples realize, oh, I probably should have been doing it, right? But I was too proud. And Jesus wasn't. He was ready to serve them, even if it was a dirty task that no leader should take on. And then he tells them, you call me teacher and Lord, and so I am. So if I have washed your feet, you're meant to wash one another's feet. In other words, he's saying, do what I've done. Be like me. Serve as I've served. Jesus, who really knew who his master was, he knew who his father was. He knew what his father was like. He knew the authority that the father had given him. So he did what the father would do. He stooped down and served and called his disciples to do the same. Called us, too, to do the same. We who follow Jesus, we know who he is. We know what he's like, or at least some days, most days. We're called to do what Jesus did, to stoop down and serve each other, not drudgingly, but eagerly, expectantly, expecting Jesus to arrive and serve us in the middle of it, and to serve us something, not just any old thing, but to serve us something wonderful. Now, you know, in some ways, I kind of think it's not fair to preach this to you, because I watch you model servanthood all the time, every Sunday morning, and every after church too, and all kinds of ways you serve. But how about those other times? Do we do that? Do we serve the way Jesus serves us? Do we expect Jesus to enter into our serving? Do we expect him to show up as we wait? Not drudgingly bored, but with eager expectation. My dear friends, what a treat it is to be in your midst. May we serve and invite others to serve, knowing how blessed we are. Blessed not just because we're here with this wonderful group and this wonderful church, but because we get to serve this master. We are lucky. May we serve knowing we are blessed. May we serve eagerly awaiting our master's entrance, expecting that he will bring gifts. May we serve not because we have to, but because we get to. Because we have a generous master who wants our best. Now, I confess that I haven't always lived this out. Whistle tell you. I certainly can't tell you that I approach every task, especially ministry task, with eager expectation of Jesus' arrival. But I have learned just how faithful he is. You know, in my job, a lot of what I've done, I've been asked to serve a conflicted church staff. And if you think you face conflicts wherever you work, I mean, church staffs, I won't say anymore. Conflicted church staffs, hurting priest, deacon, or lay leader, a challenging congregation. We call those EGRs. You know what EGR means? Extra grace required. There's some EGR people too, right? Anyway, a brokenhearted parishioner or friend. I mean, I can't tell you, you know, sometimes I've been literally driving in the dark, literally, to go somewhere to a person or a congregation or an office. And I'm like, what am I doing? I've got nothing. And the situation is impossible. And like, I have to do this? And so I say, God, I've got nothing. You have to do something. Please, God, do something. And I wish I could say that I'm very faithful and I expect as soon as I ask that he will show up. But I will say I'm not like that. But over and over, Jesus does show up. Over and over, he shows up with banquet food, doing the impossible, untangling a conflict. I mean, I've had these little churches who think they should get the best rector, the best priest in the whole world. These little churches that, I won't say anymore. And God shows up and gives them one. And I'm like, what? Healing a wound. Touching my friend with unexpected grace, unexpected. And I'm hoping it won't take you as long as it's taken me to expect God to act as you serve him and his people, and to then be eager to serve, right? Because it's when you serve that he comes, right? It's in the midst of the serving, the waiting, the girding our loins, that Jesus comes. We get to serve, even if it's hard, grueling, and seemingly unending, and your Master Jesus is ready to serve you. And you know, another thing I've learned in 42 years of ordained ministry, almost all clergy failure comes when deacons or priests or bishops take their being in charge or on top more seriously than they take their servanthood. And you know, I don't think that's true only for clergy. I think it's kind of true for all of us who follow Jesus. Instead of serving, knowing what the Master is like, knowing how worth the waiting and serving will be, they throw their weight around and it doesn't go well. It's not Jesus' way. You know, even the secular world knows this. How many of you read the book Good to Great? Yeah, okay. So they talk about level five leaders. And I remember an interview with one of the level, these are companies that were compared. They're all above average, but some of them became extraordinary companies over a long time. And they interviewed one of the leaders of these exceptional companies. And Jim Collins said, what's the difference between you and then the person he was being compared to? And he said, that's easy. He's the show horse, I'm the workhorse. And I thought, you know, like this is not a Christian book, but they get it. They get what Jesus is trying to tell us, right? He didn't need the spotlight. And in fact, he was a Christian, so. He didn't need the spotlight. He knew that God would show up as he served. So this is my prayer for you and for me, fellow followers of Jesus, that we would stay dressed for action, keep our lamps burning, that we would be like those who are eagerly waiting for our Master to come home from the wedding feast so we can open the door for him when he comes and knocks. Pray with me. Lord Jesus, make us eager and expectant to serve your people, knowing what you're like, knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt that you are eager to serve us as we seek to serve you. In Christ's name, amen.